We are third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Yes, I said yes. Gorgeous day downtown Nashville. We're here live at the Patron Platinum Club inside Bridgestone Arena. Predators and the Los Angeles Kings tonight in the building. 7 o'clock puck drop. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call here on these airwaves. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6 o'clock. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Now our buddy Tim Hasselbeck on the line with us to begin the third hour. Tim, great game last night, Titans and Bills on the big stage, and it lived up to every moment going all the way down to the wire, and the Titans coming away with the 34-31 victory. What did you make of, I guess, the decision by McDermott to go for it and do a quarterback sneak that got blown up by Jeffrey Simmons?
You know, I actually thought it was the right call by Sean McDermott. Look, they hadn't been able to stop the Titans, you know, and I think it's known by everybody, right? Like, you get going late in games, potentially in an overtime, you know, Derrick Henry ends up being harder and harder to defend. And so, you know, on the road, in that situation with a big quarterback, like, I actually think he's making the right decision in that point to try to win the game and then get out of town.
How do you feel about the quarterback sneak? Kelly Holcomb joins us every Thursday on the show. We do a contest called Silly Underdog Picks, and he's a part of it. And he's been a part of it for years. And Kelly has always told us his disdain, his displeasure with the call of quarterback sneaks. He hates that play. He thinks, because he thinks it's one, it's reckless if you've got a franchise quarterback, because he believes that it's a play that's set up for a recipe for disaster to get your quarterback hurt. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I would disagree. I mean, I'm sure he's got his reasons for it, but, like, go look at Tom Brady, who's a franchise quarterback, and his success on fourth and one or third and one when they've gone quarterback sneak. I think the problem with how it was run by Buffalo is that, you know, typically speaking, for a quarterback, like, you're looking for a bubble, like some type of soft spot to you know, kind of attack with your quarterback sneak, right? So, you know, the mechanics of it are take a snap. You actually, whether it's like a rocker step or a bit of a hesitation, like, you allow the lineman, in a sense, to fire off before you follow somebody. And I think the trick sometimes is, like, you're looking for a soft spot in that defense, but, you know, you have to be careful because the offensive line, like, they're pinching, right? They're not going to get beat inside. So if the guard is going to pinch, you know, then the tackle's got to pinch with him. So if you're like Josh Allen and you try to, you know, find a bubble that's a little bit further out, you know, ultimately what ends up happening is you end up hitting somebody that's unblocked. Whereas if you just kind of, you know, follow the back of, you know, one of your guards, and you have to get a yard or a half yard, you know, I think you're more likely to get it. So, I think it's a good play. Do I think it's a good play all the time? No. Do I think you have to be, you know, careful with how you use it? Yes. Should a quarterback sneak sometimes be paired with tempo? Yeah, it should. You know, I believe so. Look, I think it's a good play. I don't think there's any doubt it's a good play. In fact, I've maybe shared this with you guys, but, you know, I had a stretch at ESPN where I spent a lot of time with John Fox, who obviously, you know, taking two teams to a Super Bowl as a head coach, was a tremendous defensive coordinator at the Giants before he was a head coach for the Carolina Panthers. And the thing he said, he goes, my favorite thing defending fourth and one was when a team would go in the shotgun. He's like, that was my favorite thing. Because, you know, you need to get a half a yard or a yard, and they then decide to move the ball 5 yards further back from where they're trying to get it. And, you know, I think sometimes we can make things too complicated, and quarterback sneak, oftentimes it's simple, but it works.
I see. Allen was 13 for 14, according to ESPN SportsCenter, in third or fourth and one or less.
In his career?
In his career. Hmm.
And by the way, ESPN win probability.
Yeah, he's huge. you know, that's part of it. Then the other, I think he did a poor job of running. Go watch it again. Like, he's almost out in like the C gap, you know, when he tries to, you know, where he ends up, because he's kind of looking for, you know, a soft spot, and then Simmons is essentially on block.
Well, why is he going to the left side where Simmons is anyway? That was my big question that I brought up earlier. It was like, why would you be going to the left? When you go to the right away from 98, I wouldn't go towards Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, or you go, you know, behind a guard that you like. And to that point, like, I'm sure that that's been discussed. Like, you guys know I coached fifth and sixth grade football, and we ran a quarterback sneak one time, I think it was this year. Like, my left guard weighed about 84 pounds. My right guard weighed about 130 pounds. And my quarterback went to the left. And I was like, yo, like, wait, let's think about this again, all right?
Have you been to science class lately? Let's look at some physics here.
Look, the same thing applies, okay? The same thing applies in the pros as it does in fifth and sixth grade football and stuff like that.
With all that being said, I did see the ESPN win probability on that call, and it was basically 50-50 on going for it or kicking the field goal, which I thought was interesting that the win probability was basically right down the middle, whether going for it and your chances of winning the game or kicking a field goal and your chances of winning the game was pretty much 50-50.
Well, I think because you still had to score the touchdown, right? Like, getting the first down was one thing. But like, you still were going to have to score the touchdown. I'm guessing that's why it was like that, right? I mean, getting the first down wasn't guaranteeing you the touchdown. Look, it's been interesting seeing the way people have been aggressive on these fourth downs. I do think it makes sense, and I know we know the result of it now, right? And Simmons makes a great play, and they stop him, and all that. But like, would you have wanted to go into overtime if you were Buffalo?
I admit it, because I always say on the show that I try to always give my honest opinion of what I'm thinking in the moment, not hindsight, because hindsight, we're all geniuses. And at the moment, I was very surprised that they were going for it. I would have kicked the field goal, taken my chances, but I do understand why, because the Titans, believe it or not, as good as Buffalo's defense has been, which was number one in a lot of categories, points allowed and what have you, that they were not able to stop the Titans' offense. So I get it. You're on the road. But at the time, if I'm just being honest, I was like, you know, he came up a little bit short on that scramble, and I just would kick the field goal and take my chances in overtime.
I'm the opposite. I like going for it because the way I'm looking at it, Tim, I feel like you're putting everything on the coin toss, or a lot on the coin toss, because it looked to me like it was going to be very tough for either defense to stop the offense. Whoever gets the ball first, you're hard-pressed to say, oh, our defense will stop them. That's why, let me ask you this, Tim. I thought it was interesting. This was probably a debatable thing where...
But can I finish real quick, though, on that thought, though? Tim, the reason is exactly what you just stated. It wasn't, hey, get the first down, it results in a touchdown. It's get a first down, and oh, by the way, there's 20 seconds left, and you still have to score.
But you could then kick the field goal if you need to. You could still kick a field goal if you get the first down.
You could. I think when you go for it there, you're planning on
you're going
scoring.
You're playing to win.
I think that's just why the probability changed. I just think that Derrick Henry's harder to defend later in games than he is earlier in games. Like, we can talk about why that is. I think there's some obvious reasons why. But, like, it is indisputable that he gets going later in games. We agree on that?
No 100%.
Question. Plenty of numbers 100%. To back that up.
Okay. All right. So you haven't stopped him. Okay? He's running you over. What did he rush for last night? Like, what was the number last night?
143.
Yeah, Henry, 143.
143 in three touchdowns?
Yep,
three touchdowns and only 20 carries.
Okay, so like, back to the point, like, all right, if they win the coin toss and they decide to just sledgehammer us to death with, like, I don't want, like, to me, if I'm Sean McDermott, I'm like, I can't lose the game like that. like kicking a field goal, losing the coin toss, and then watching Derrick Henry, you know, just fall forward, you know, on a 10-play drive. Like, we can't do that. So I think that's and look, we're on the road. So I think that's why he made the decision. I really do. I think it literally becomes that simple in terms of making that decision. And by the way, like, your quarterback sneaking it with a 250-pound quarterback. So I actually liked the call. It did. Look, sometimes you can still like the call and it not work out. Like, I'll still go back to that, you know, Seahawks Patriots Super Bowl, and look, everyone's like, hey, run the ball. It's like, well, where are you running it? Because the way they lined up on defense, like, you can't block everybody. So now sometimes somebody just makes a great play, and in this case, Isaiah Simmons makes a great play.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. So, Tim, another thing that was brought up on the broadcast was whether the Titans should have taken the timeouts to preserve time to have another possession after whatever happened on the Bills' possession. Mike Vrabel decided to say, I'm in the lead. I'm going to put the pressure on them to manage the clock and hope that it won't give anything more up than a field goal. So tell me what I like that he did that. I've seen teams go the other way. What factors come into play for you when you're making that decision?
You know what's interesting is I think that Vrabel is out on an island in terms of that decision when I watch NFL games. And, like, there was one the other day. I forget what game it was in. But, like, there was one the other day where it was kind of like, maybe it was that Green Bay-Cincinnati game where, like, a timeout was called quickly, and it was like, well, wait a second. It's fourth and one, and they're deciding whether or not they're going to kick a 50-something-yard field goal. Like, I think you just helped them by, like, trying to preserve time. I think you just helped them by, like, giving them a chance to take time to make the decision of, hey, are we going for it here, or are we kicking the field goal? Maybe it was Cincinnati taking the timeout as Mason Crosby had been struggling. So, like, Willie, I think you bring up a really interesting point, because the prevailing feeling, I think, has been in the NFL is preserve the time. To use your timeouts, preserve the time. And while, like, there's clear reasoning for that of why that makes sense, the pressure of the clock and the other team trying to preserve timeouts and be mindful of, you know, what plays they can and can't call in that situation maybe is more significant than allowing yourself some time to come back. So I feel like the most obvious scenario to me where I really struggle with, I don't think I would use a timeout there, is when it's a fourth and one and you're like, okay, do I want to go for it here, or am I going to kick a 54-yard field goal to win it? Like, that's the time. You know, down in tight like that, you know, with Vrabel not knowing that Buffalo would go for it in that scenario, then the right thing probably to do is to preserve time, maybe get a return and attempt to go, you know, a long field goal of your own in regulation.
He also showed a lot of confidence in his defense, even though on paper the defense is by far the weak suit as opposed to his offense that had been rolling and scored, what, five straight possessions. So that it was really interesting thinking, but I think it's the sort of the defensive mindset. I saw Jeff Fisher do that a lot of times too and succeed. But it's a calculated risk, and it's something you got to decide right there in the moment. That's why the game management is so important by a coach.
Yeah. And truthfully, like, on the scenario that you're talking about and I'm talking about, like, especially with a long field goal attempt where somebody's like, are we going for it here because there's 45 seconds left in the game? Like, what are we doing? Like, you don't know what the other guy is going to do. And I think that for some guys, like, remember Belichick, like, without hesitation, attempted this long field goal late in the game? And it was a little – I was – somewhat surprised at how quick and decisive he was with, like, yeah, we're not even going to try to get the first down here. like, I see, to me, I think those are decisions that the offensive team's coaches, you know, oftentimes like are laboring over and calling a timeout. I think lets them go, hey, do we like a 4th-and-2 call here, or do we need to kick it? And so I think sometimes preserving time ends up helping the offense.
Mike Garofalo of NFL Network has reported that, according to his source, Dawson Knox broke a bone in his hand, and his timeline for his absence, they're thinking it might not be that bad since Buffalo is going into a bye week. Remember last night in that game when the Bills decided to go for the two-point conversion, Josh Allen tried to call off the play, and Dawson Knox was like, nope, I'm still throwing to you.
Yeah,
but now they found out he had a broken bone in his hand.
That was a nice play, too.
That was a great play, and honestly, looking at it, I'm sure he's an amazing athlete. Looking at it, it looked like he had a broken bone in his hand the way he threw it.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. And now that the dust has settled from last night a little bit, both Buffalo and the Titans are 4-2. You have the Chargers and the Raiders at 4-2, the Bengals at 4-2, and then the Ravens at 5-1 in the AFC. If you're looking at the Titans compared to everyone else, where are they at this point sitting at 4-2 in your mind?
I mean, well, let's just like take a step back. Considering where they are after week one, like, I think they have to be thrilled about where they are and what the rest of the conference looks like. And yeah. And I think that, you know, a win like that against an opponent like that that's as respected as they are, and then also the stage of it. You know, this wasn't a 1 o'clock, you know, game in Buffalo. You know, the only NFL game on the magnitude of it, you know, that was a physical football game, which I think that really plays into the hands better for Tennessee than it does for Buffalo. I think they've got to be really, really encouraged by it. I will also say this. Like, I don't know if you guys were struck by this, but, like, looking at Vrabel in, like, the first and second quarter.
You're breaking.
Right? Is Tim, like, in the West Wing again? West Wing of the castle?
Am I in the West Wing? No, what I was saying was, like in the first quarter, like, Vrabel looked so frustrated. That, like,
yes.
I thought that if he could have punched
beside
somebody,
himself,
he would have. Beside himself. Like, and so for it to start the way it did and for the team to have the type of resolve that they did, like, I think with the way the conferences look, the way they've played against Baltimore in the past, and that being the team that everyone kind of is looking at like, oh, they're going to be hard to defend, yeah, I think they should feel really good about where they sit right now.
Yeah, I think the thing that worries me that, you know, and losses happen. You're not going to win every game. I mean, that's just how competitive the NFL is. But the two losses that the Titans have, one is a bad loss to a really, really good team. One is a bad loss to a not-so-good team. And you got to wonder what that means. And you look at some of the underlying stats, I think that's where people are really unsure about this team. And also the injuries. I mean, the secondary, I mean, have they called you? Are you going to have to play defensive back? Oof. I mean, that's kind of where they're at this point.
Yeah, they're in a bad spot there, obviously. And look, that wasn't a great spot coming into the year. And so, look, you've got to be concerned with that. But then, like, look, Baltimore, you know, Baltimore is playing Le'Veon Bell at running back and a bunch of other guys. Like, it's... So everyone's going to deal with it. That's why this thing is such a marathon. You need to just be able to survive it and have the people that really, really matter still healthy when you face somebody in the postseason. And, look, I think right now, look, not to say that corner isn't an issue, and maybe there's something you can do to you know, address it. I'm not sure what you can do. But maybe... You know, maybe you can. And look, at that point, like,
if you get into the postseason and still have Derrick Henry, you're still running the football, and you can have both, you know, wide receivers, you know, good to go in the postseason, like, people are going to be worried about playing Tennessee.
I'll ask it about these two teams specifically, but you have the Titans that were in a shootout with the Bills, and they find a way to win the game. And then you have the Cowboys that really, you know, they probably shouldn't have won the game, but they ended up winning the game because that's what good teams do. What does that do for a team when you're right there at the end and you find a way to break through and get the W? What does that do for the confidence?
I think it's huge, and one of the reasons I think it's huge is that, typically speaking, because you play so many games, you find yourself in situations like that, you know, going forward. And when you lose games in tight moments, like, there's just a doubt. Like, there's no different in Pop Warner, high school, college football. Like, when you consistently lose close games, there is a feeling for some players like, oh, here we go again, when you're in a tight one. And, you know, conversely, when you figure it out or you find ways to win, it's the way people feel in Green Bay when it's like, oh, wait, we have 34 seconds left? That's okay. Like, no timeout, like, not worried about it. Like, Aaron's going to march us down and we'll make a kick, like, because you've been there before. And so I think that Dallas has had an experience like that. I think the Titans have had experience like that. Green Bay certainly has this year. Baltimore did a couple weeks ago. And so, I think those end up being kind of situations where when you look back on the season and you're like, oh, we're hosting a playoff game this weekend. And you know what? Like, part of it was that. And we're good if we find ourselves in a situation like that again.
Last thing quickly, how do you pick yourself up after a huge win on a short week and turn around and try to beat the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think the big thing is that's the leadership of the team. Like, that's Mike Vrabel as a player. Like, identify, all right, are we in pads at all this week? Are we, like, what do we do with our schedule to kind of have the right, like, work-rest balance? And that's where that are now coaching, you know, sometimes have a better feel than others.
Good stuff, Tim. Really appreciate it. Thanks as always. Have a great week. We'll do it again next week.
Cool. See you, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck, NFL analyst, head coach. He does it all.
Middle school football. Yeah.
Does it all. We will come back and hear, speaking of head coach, Mike Vrabel is going to talk about their win last night at Nissan Stadium over the Bills, 34-31. He's going to have his reaction to that. We will carry that live. But first, Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Loan Pronto.
All right. Mortgage rates are on the move. Don't miss the chance to lock in the best rate of your lifetime with Loan Pronto. Remember, call today. Take advantage of their super popular zero-cost refi program. So many people are doing this. You can get a rate with an APR in the low twos, with no junk fees, no closing costs. Yes, they pay the closing costs, even if you refinanced 6 months ago. So if you did that, just remember that if your current APR is over 2.75, you need to call now for a free 30-second quote. Loan Pronto's all-digital process is fast and easy. Virtually no paperwork required, and most loans get closed in 14 days. If you act now, you could even skip your next two house payments. How's that for your budget? You got to love that. Here's how you get in touch with the folks at Loan Pronto. 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. That's 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. Ask about the zero-cost refi. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781, subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.
Don't forget, we're giving you the chance to win Predators tickets this entire month. Yeah, it's not over. Still have, 12 days left in the month? All you have to do is post a picture of your radio, or as the copy says, your radio dial. I think you should get moved up to the top of the line, or front of the line, if you actually have a radio dial set on 102.5 The Game. Post that picture on social media, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Tag us at The Game and use the hashtag #TicketDash to be instantly qualified to win. Show us your dash, brought to you by Social Furniture. Shop local, shop social. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, our show is presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD products curated for life. Taylor Lewan has tweeted out a message to everyone, and it says,
"Thank you all for the thoughts and prayers. I'm all right. Hashtag no bad days." And the responses to that, people are saying the Bills could have used you last night and tweeting the Chris Broussard video. Glad you're feeling okay. But, yeah, Taylor Lewan just tweeting that out about 10 minutes ago saying that he's all right. That was a, that was certainly a scary moment, like in the stadium. It got very quiet.
Sure.
I was where my seats were. That was at the other end zone. So it was hard to see initially who it was, and then words started getting around and looking at Twitter that it was Lewan, because all I could see was a leg that wasn't moving. And I was like, whoever that is, they're not moving. That's not good. That's scary. And so then, like you said, when he did the thumbs up, that place went crazy. So glad to see that Taylor Lewan's okay.
They chanted his name.
They did. And that's what I was saying earlier. I was saying to some people watching the game, you need to see his thumb go up because they're chanting his name and the cart is moving, going towards the tunnel. And it was like, a good sign would be for his thumb to come up in the air. And it wasn't coming up. And I'm like, uh-oh. And then finally it came up and I was like, whew, okay, that's good news. That's, or at least that's better news than him going all the way across the field as they're chanting his name and his thumb doesn't come up. The news is not good, unfortunately, for Caleb Farley. His season has been lost. It looks like also Cam Batson's season has been lost. I'm sure Mike Vrabel will probably communicate that here very, very shortly when he takes to the mic. The Ravens have lost their left tackle for the season. Ronnie Stanley is done with an ankle injury. You think the Ravens have had some injuries this year? They just keep plugging away.
No doubt. Pro Football Focus has put out their grades from last night. Top five offensive grades, at least 20 snaps. Tackled David Quesenberry with a 72.8. Wide receiver Nick Westbrook Akina with a 70.4. Wide receiver A.J. Brown a 70.1. And running back Derrick Henry a 69.4. Ryan Tannehill a 67.4.
How is Derrick Henry not 100?
Yeah,
Okay, let's head over to the Titans facility and Mike Vrabel. Let's hear what the head coach has to say.
Squad ready to go.
Given the situation with Farley and Fulton probably not available, the next man up mindset, you know, how much does that apply to Chris Jones? What are some of the things that you like from him?
Chris has been with us. Certainly somebody that we'll look at. Body's been with us for a while, been working, practicing, and so, you know, confident that if those guys get an opportunity, they'll do everything they can to take advantage of it.
What's the balance between when you're down at a position between bringing a practice squad guy that maybe doesn't have very much experience versus going outside and bringing in somebody that doesn't really know your system?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is what have they been doing? You know, how much work have they been putting in? Where are they at physically? Where are they at mentally as far as, picking up the scheme and how much work that requires in just a short amount of time. So, we're looking at a lot of those things and working our way through them.
Having a little fun last night or paying tribute to the Music City Miracle with the lateral on the punt and the fake on the kickoff?
No, just trying, fun. This isn't, winning is fun. That's the only thing that's fun. There's nothing fun about letting the gunner go through two guys and disrupt the play. It was a play that we thought we could take advantage of. Unfortunately, we didn't hit it.
Any further update on Taylor Lewan at this point? How is he doing?
I saw Taylor this morning. I would say all signs lead to him being in the concussion protocol. So I would say he's doing as well as he could be. But I saw him this morning.
On the returns you mentioned earlier, I guess was the idea that first one kind of set up the second one because you didn't throw it?
No, one was on a kickoff, one was on a punt. We're just trying to create some big plays there and, do something in a return game.
What was going so well with the pass protection yesterday? Keith Tannehill upright for pretty much the whole game.
Just blocked inside out. ran him by on the outside. You know, I think the you know, our ability to run the football and our ability to, you know, to work the play pass and play game, play action pass game in the second half, something that was critical. You know. So anytime we can do that and keep Ryan clean, that's a positive. And you know, credit to the guys that were in there.
What did you get out of Avery Williamson last night?
I'm sorry?
Avery Williamson, what did you get out of him? How did he play?
I didn't have many snaps in the game, you know, so again, he was a guy that we brought in on short notice, tried to learn two positions, and, you know, we'll continue to work with Avery. Loved his attitude, the way he came in here. It was fun. I never had a chance to coach him before. You know, when I got here, he headed out in free agency, which, you know, was great for him. But he came in here with a great attitude, really enjoyed, you know, having his presence around last week. And then, you know, we'll continue to progress with him this week.
To Cam Batson, is it in fact a torn ACL? And I know he's a guy that you really like. How disappointing is that for, you know?
Well, I don't like to see any of our players get injured. You know what I mean? I care a lot about them all. And so it's unfortunate when we lose any of them. You know, we understand the risk associated with this game and, you know, playing it at the level and the speed in which they do. So hopefully if all those guys that got hurt, you know, last night, or that will continue to get hurt, we'll take care of them. We'll do everything that we can to, you know, to get them back and take care of them physically and mentally.
Jeff had the big splash play, obviously, at the end of the game last night. That's a position where sometimes it's hard to judge by statistics how a guy's playing. What has his impact been throughout the course of the season, and has he taken his game to another level in the last
couple
weeks?
I think he's still trying. I mean, I think there's things that we still, you know, work with Jeff and show him on, but, you know, I think his leadership, first and foremost, is something that's, you know, been great. I think that, you know, his effort, I mean, he plays a lot of snaps for us. And so his effort for a big man is very good. His physicality, you know, he's fun to coach. You know, he's coachable, takes the coaching. His team means a lot to him. So he's an important piece of who we are.
Ryan Tannehill completed 9 straight passes down the stretch. What makes him so clutch in those moments?
Well, I think experience. I mean, we've played a lot of close games, unfortunately, but I think experience of being in those moments, I think the things settled down for him. I don't think Ryan was great. I don't think, you know, a lot of us were great early in the game. So just kind of got into the flow of some drives and got into a much better rhythm offensively.
You talk about guys who love football. How important is that attitude in those close games when you, like you just talked about?
I mean, I think that any time times get tough, whether that's injuries or adversity, close situations, and I think that guys that truly love it will find a way to get through. And I don't know if it's in a close situation or close game, but it's usually when things aren't great and things are not in your favor, you know, the guys that love their teammates and love the game usually find ways to get through.
How did Hooker do in his first game back off IR?
Good. I mean, I thought Imani was prepared. I thought he was active, and, you know, that's he was playing well before, you know, he got hurt, and hopefully we'll see him, you know, progress through the week without any setbacks after some game action.
Like the front seven struck a good balance between affecting the pocket, affecting the quarterback, and preventing him from running, staying disciplined. What was your assessment of, I guess, the play on the quarterback?
I thought it was okay. I mean, it was good at times, and then there were times, obviously, you know, we talked about it, you know, going to our left, you know, or his right, and that's where he made plays, and that's where we, you know, I try to show him, you know, when he goes out there to the right, it usually doesn't end in a positive play for the defense, and that was the case again last night. So, you know, but there were other times where it was, you know, it was really good. And we affected them, and, you know, but it just, we got to try to do a little bit more.
It's obviously a lot of talk about resiliency last night. You guys won 13 games and you trailed in the fourth quarter over the last 3 years. Where does that start? Where does that come from?
You know, just trying to put a group of guys together that care about each other, that don't panic, that understand that then you're going to play in some tight games in this league, and again, the experience of it, the type of people that we have, the messages that we preach, it's a impressive, interesting stat. We'd like to not be down, but we certainly find ways to win, and have a lot of faith in our guys to execute.
Putting a 1 week at a time, or one game at a time mindset aside, like, how do you look at these next four games? Because it seems like that's going to be like the toughest stretch on your schedule.
And just looking at really today, our preparation, our meetings, Toronto, we'll figure out where we go after this week. We're home, against really one of the best teams in the NFL, however you want to, slice it. It'll be a huge challenge for us on a short week to get back, to get ready, to play an explosive offense and, a defense that is, is going to be, geared up, ready to try to stop us.
Was this stretch one that you guys kind of circled and looked
no,
at?
No, I don't circle any games. They're all in the same color. Some are on the road, some are at home, some are on Monday night, some are on Sunday, some are on Thursdays.
Your level of trust in
other than I think we go to Boston around Thanksgiving because Tyler's home, so I did look at that one.
What's your level of trust in Westbrook Akine at this point after he steps up again?
The same way it was last week and the week before, and just kind of expect him to do his job, and he's done that, and went in there, got key blocks, had some key catches, plays on special teams for us.
How do you describe David Long's
plays with a lot of energy, plays with a lot of speed, quickness. It's never going to be perfect in there, but, David shows a sense of passion and, love watching him play, throws his body around. And so do all guys, all the guys out there. So I think he's getting more comfortable each and every week. Saw him blitz and affect the quarterback and, saw him do some things, and obviously there'll be some plays that we have to coach up and that he'd like to have back, but he's very active.
You feel like with Julio, is this kind of going to be what you expect, that maybe he's good enough to go full games? Maybe there are going to be some games where, that the hamstring keeps him out a bit?
And we'll just take it day by day, see how it goes tomorrow.
What's it like winning a game like this as a head coach versus maybe as a player?
You get the next day off if you're a player. There's such a satisfaction from watching the guys celebrate and have success. I was lucky to be in a situation to have success as a player. And it is very gratifying to watch a group that you get to coach celebrate victories. It's very hard to win in this league. And guys hear me say that all the time. It's hard. It's difficult. You put a lot into it. The games are tough. So it is very satisfying and rewarding for me just to watch those guys celebrate and enjoy the victory.
Mike, you obviously you obviously feel for all your injured guys, but for a guy like Caleb, who's had his injury issues and then finally gets his chance to start and then he's taken out the way he was. Is there anything you have to say to a guy like that who's kind of been working so hard to get to a point where he can play for you guys and then that opportunity finally comes and then, he's taken out?
It's unfortunate when any of them get injured. And I know and I'm very aware, as we all are, of Caleb's history. He was very emotional. But I told him that rest assured we're going to take care of him physically and mentally. I think that's the biggest thing probably is when you're dealing with some of these injuries is the mental approach that you take about willing to talk to people and be willing to let people help you that have either been there or that, can help you through, because there's going to be, it's going to be a long process, and I'm confident that he'll be back better, stronger, but it is unfortunate.
When
with someone like Julio or anyone else that's a big part of your game plan and what you guys want to do on a Sunday or a Monday, does the next man up adjustment in game become more difficult at all?
I mean, there's probably a few plays, but that you would have that, you know, have not available because of somebody that's not in there. But I think for the most part, we operated and functioned with everything that we had in the game plan.
How much better did Bud look compared to the first couple games?
We only played in the first one, so I guess, you know, Bud factored a little bit. I think just hadn't been out there a lot. So, you know, we'll keep working him in, see how he feels, see how he responds, and, you know, had some good plays and had some plays that, you know, like everybody else, he'd like to have back and do a little better or, you know, continue to work.
What would you say is happening with Harold Landry? Is he starting to finish a lot more and actually, you know, get to the quarterback and take him down?
I mean, Harold works hard every week and has continued to put himself in position to be around a quarterback. And, you know, one of those things was that Josh has a tendency to hold it. So last night, you know, Harold was able to, you know, and Jeffrey got one of those, just continue to rush relentlessly and hope that some of the disguise on the back end or the coverage would hold up for you to get there.
You've done it before yourself. I mean, is there an art to being able to, you know, finish the deal like that?
Well, I mean, that's probably the most, I would say that's the hardest part of pass rush is the last two or three steps and being able to finish and also being able to accelerate, being able to bend and reach, you know, as those guys are trying to push you. And then also do it legally, you know, do it legally. I thought where Danico's play that ended up in our interception, you know, was a very good play. He was reaching, he affected the quarterback, didn't hit him high, didn't lead with his helmet, didn't hit him low. And I thought that was a real positive play. And it doesn't go down as a sack, it goes down as an interception. But it was a fantastic rush, and it was the only reason why Kevin ended up with an interception.
Maybe similar question with Byard. You know, I just had the one pick last year, but this year certainly all around the ball. Is there, you know, again, sort of an art to being around the ball, and is he doing that more so this year now?
Just cover your guy, or, you know, I think he's just, you know, executing the defense, and, you know, again, he made a nice play in Arizona, you know. Quarterback scrambled, he was on his man, he turned around, play extended, and, you know, caught a good, you know, nice pick. And, you know, last night somebody else helped him out, but again, he was in the spot. And, you know, we ask a lot of Kevin, you know, we put him in different places, and so, you know, he'll show up a lot of different places.
How do you feel that Jack Rabbit has settled into the defense over the first, you know, several games of the season? How have you kind of assessed what he's done for you guys?
I think there's been some positive plays, some really positive plays, and some plays that, you know, he has to be better on consistently. And I think that's the same thing that I'd say for a lot of our guys. There's some really, really good clips of defense, some really positive plays, and then some plays that, you know, we have to execute better. You know, we have to be on the same page. You have to understand what's going on. And Jack Rabbit would be in that group with a lot of other guys on defense and this football team as well. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks.
There you go. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel talking about the 34-31 victory over the Bills last night on Monday Night Football. We'll come back, wrap up the third hour with some thoughts on things we just heard. We'll do that next here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's been a loaded hour here, third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. We're here live at Patron Platinum Club inside Bridgestone Arena. Be the Predators and the Los Angeles Kings tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop. Pete and Hal will have your call on these airwaves. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6 o'clock. Speaking of that, you want to win a pair of tickets to be here tonight with us? Text in. Use our text line, which is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Text in the youngest player currently on the active roster by the Predators. The youngest player currently on their roster. NHL roster, their youngest player. Text in that name, and you could be chosen to be here tonight to see the Predators and the Kings. It started this hour with Tim Hasselbeck. Great conversation with him. That conversation was brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. You just heard Mike Vrabel talking about things. Caleb Farley and Cam Batson are lost for the season. It seems like the news is a little bit better on Taylor Lewan, although it sounds like he will be in protocol. Don't know if that means he'll be available for this weekend, this Sunday against the Chiefs or not. A lot of people, and you weren't here for this, Willie, and I said, I did talk to someone this morning. It's one person, but it's somebody that I trust. But I said, if we want to treat it like a newspaper job, then maybe I need to get a second person to confirm that. People are trying to find out if this is the same knee as when he tore his ACL in college. And I've been told it's the other one. So now I'm being told he's now torn both ACLs. And like I said, that's one person. It's somebody that I trust, but that is just one person telling me that a lot of people are trying to figure out, is it the same knee or another knee? And I'm just telling you a conversation I had this morning, and I was told it was the other knee. Well, I guess we'll find out here shortly if that's the case or not. I mean, it'll get out there. And if it's the other knee, like what I'm being told, man, that's a lot of stuff on Caleb Farley in the last 3 years.
Very troubling. And I mean, even if it's the same knee.
You're right. Either way.
It's just, it really hampers development. We've been saying from the start, he was a bit of a project because why? He sat out last year because of COVID, did not play football. He had the back surgery. Now you've got this second ACL coming in some form. He had a shoulder injury on top. He got sick last week. It just seems like there's always something going on. So,
which was the knock of him coming out of college.
Right. You don't want to make the assumption that it's always going to be like that. I always use Phil Sims as an example. First couple of years, Phil Sims could not stay on the field for the Giants, always getting hurt. But then he went through a stretch where he was fine. But you just do worry about that label, injury prone.
Tell everybody. I mean, you had a great example off the air when we were listening to Mike Vrabel.
Chris Brown,
former running back of the Titans. I mean, that was the knock.
Always dealing with something.
And it was always because he's a straight up runner. He's always going to be hurt. He's a straight up runner.
But at least he showed you a flash, like at the beginning. I mean, obviously helped him move on from.
Well, he had some productive, games, seasons. But I mean, he still was marred by injuries. He was always banged up with something.
And with Caleb Farley, we haven't even really gotten a chance to see him do that.
Yeah, we haven't even seen
any flashes.
And
we're not going to now for the
another
rest of
season's
this year.
Gone.
So it's just maddening.
Yeah, Chris Brown basically had two good years. His second year in the league, played 11 games, over 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, and then the next year, just shy of 1,000, 851 touchdowns, and then he just couldn't stay
healthy.
How many games? 14.
Yeah.
Never played 16 in his career.
No. Even at times, he was out there playing.
Even before he had the 1,000-yard season, he was missing a lot of time with various things.
Yep.
So,
And the problem is that, John Robinson will get criticized because that was the exact knock. I mean, everybody knew his talent was first round grade. I mean, his talents are all there. Like, nobody's disputing what he brings to the table on the field when upright and healthy. But the problem was the red flags were his medicals. I mean, there were teams that said, we took him off the board. We were too nervous about his injuries and his medicals. And so that's the problem that right now that John Robinson will get knocked for that, because that's 2 years in a row now. No first-round pick. Mm.
Two completely different things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, you do wonder, what's the blend of bad luck with, the risk that you take? Like, there was risk taken with both guys for various reasons. They took the risk because of the high ceiling, and they've struck out so far. So hopefully, as you heard Mike Vrabel say, he'll come back stronger, better, et cetera, but it's just not going to be this year. And that's the sad thing, is when something happens this year, this is the year they want to do well.
Right.
This is the window.
Yep. We'll come back. We'll head over to West End, our weekly chat with Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. That's coming up next to begin the final hour. Right now, I want to tell you about the NBA. It's back. It's at DraftKings Sportsbook, the authorized sports betting partner of the NBA. The key to victory is a strong starting five. New customers can bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game. And if they do so, you win $200 in free bets. So why not make your roster Washington, 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 and yeah, Washington. You get my drift. DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also get skin in the game with the new same game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit, withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that promo code 1025GAME and bet just $5 on any NBA team to win. And if that team wins, you win $200 in free bets. That promo code again, 1025GAME, this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, the authorized sports betting partner of the NBA. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.